Thanks, João. It's a great pleasure to be at PI, and thanks for the invite. Our organizers asked me to talk about Gaussian theorems, which, well, I will talk about the recent work with Bauer Mohamedjanov on the subject, and I guess it's supposed to be informal, and there was recently, I guess, a lot of sophisticated progress, and my talk will be a set of simple exercises in modular bootstrap, essentially, and I will actually provide, I would like to provide many technical details. So I want to do some very straightforward derivations of few results, and one of the theorem will. Okay, so let's start. Let me start with some vague motivation. So we have, I guess, in conformal field theory, we have these two quantum numbers, and we recently there was a lot of progress in understanding the properties in the spin, and in particular we have this analyticity in spin, and a beautiful set of techniques. I guess there is an open problems of what happens with J equals 0 and 1, but otherwise we have this beautiful picture of Regis trajectories. I don't know what to draw them. Further, I will just draw pieces of them, and okay, that's very nice, but it's also, of course, very interesting to understand what happens, what can be said about, yes, and in particular, of course, as you all well know, if we take J to infinity with some twist fixed, we have a good control over the theory. On the other hand, if we fix J, if we take J equal constant, and we move along the delta direction, it's a direction of energy, so high energy physics, I guess, is in this direction. So it's, of course, it's very interesting because many of the questions which people care about in different contexts occur at large delta. So many, especially, I guess, for those who are motivated in holography, that's very interesting. What is the set of UV completions of gravitational theories and ideas, but also from the purely quantum field theory point of view, say thermal physics occur in a sense at large delta, so it's very interesting to understand that. So one, I guess one thing about delta is that, if a theory is chaotic or we expect that at large delta the spectrum is very dense, and the spacing is between the energy levels is very small. On the other hand, of course, at low energies we have a few states, and again we have some techniques to analyze them. And here I don't know what's happening. Say, the question is: so how do we say something about this? How do we analyze the states? And I guess, what are the right questions to ask about them? Of course, the famous results about this large delta things is that for certain questions, at least we probably believe that there is some sort of average description, random matrix theory, or ETH generalization, and it's extremely interesting to understand what precisely these words mean for CFTs, and can we develop such an effective description of the states? I don't know how to do that. I will not talk about that. If we don't say, let's say we don't take these heavy states, well, so in holography, the dual to black also are interesting. But if we don't make them external and say we stick to external light operators, then as I guess Bauer explained last year, we can develop some sort of large delta expansion, and this is related, say, for the 4-point correlation function, the Euclidean OPE, as he explained last year. But also, this is something very familiar from the study of modular invariants. In particular, the famous example of sort of large delta expansion is a Cardy formula. So one thing which is you can ask both about the Cardy formula and about this large delta expansion, which in a sense follows from Lorentzian inversion formula and I guess some few other assumptions. You can ask what happens at finite delta. Okay, so these are some asymptotic formulas. So what happens at finite delta? And there is this general question which seems to appear in different contexts, which is a question of outliers. That's how at least we call them in the paper with David, Peter, and Murat. And by outliers, I mean that if you have this large delta expansion, it's a set of analytic formulas. But then if you go to finite delta, you can ask, does this formula is valid, or you get some random jobs which are localized at finite delta? And if it doesn't happen, how do you prove it? And so by outliers, I mean what happens to this large delta expansion at finite delta. Now, of course, since this set of states is chaotic and discrete, well, it's very dense and discrete, you don't want to maybe talk about the separate states. So what we will do is that, let's say we have a spectral density, it's useful to introduce an integrated spectral density, so we average it, where rho of delta is the sum of, say, iterators, delta. Depending on your physical quantity, it can be just, say, for partition function, it's just this. If you consider correlation functions, you can put here a three-point function. So it doesn't matter. I will talk about partition function, so I will not put it. And then if you have some spectrum and you plot this function, it will have this staircase shape. And let me imagine that you have something like let's say you have some this large delta expansion was it's the statement that you can say, well, let's say your spectral density looks like this. So this this I called an outlier. It's something that if you, let's say, you develop this, you can write this, say, f of delta. I write just a random formula that it behaves like delta of alpha 1 plus, say, some correction again, delta of beta. So what do you mean precisely? Because you see this f of delta is a staircase function. So we mean that, if you take the limit of delta to infinity of f of delta alpha is equal to 1, or if you take the difference alpha minus beta, it's it's bounded. Now, you see, so the problem is that if this is some asymptotic statement, in many applications you care what actually happens at finite delta. We don't want to know about the asymptotic, so you want to understand how to extend these techniques to finite delta. And that's, I guess, one point which I would like to discuss. And compared to this paper from last year, which was applied to Euclidean OP, the main ingredient, or the ingredient which allows to go to this finite delta, would be the so-called HKS formula. So HKS type of formulas. So this is for Hartmann, Keller, and Stoica, and this formula originally was derived for the modular inverse in the context of partition functions in two-dimensional CFTs. But in earlier this year, there was a paper by Krauss and Siva Ramakrishnan, who derived this HKS type formula for the four-point correlation function, which, well, I will explain what this HKS type formulas are. So now let me make a few more comments, which is that, The first, to draw the analogy, in the large J studies, so when we consider large spin, there is a natural separation of terms, which some of them are called Casimir singular versus Casimir regular. So Casimir singular terms, well, you can think about them in different ways, but basically, if you analyze the four-point function, Casimir singular terms are those coming from the terms in the correlation functions which have non-zero double discontinuity, or they are non-analytic in spin. So they are non-analytic in J. And so therefore, by acting with the Casimir operator at some J to the alpha, you can access them even if they are suppressed with some big power. By acting with the Casimir operator, you can enhance them and make them big. So here, what we found in last year and is that, in a sense, yes, and Casimir regular terms are those which are sort of not captured by these things. Because they're related to outliers in this thing, and they do not contribute to double discontinuity. So here, in the large J expansion, you see that you have these discrete sums. So you might think, okay, how do we do this large delta expansion? And sort of the cartoon which I like is that. Imagine you have this function f of delta in sum of, say, ci's times some expansion and increasing powers alpha i's, plus you have some sort of random discreteness noise. It's a staircase function, so we don't know the details of discreteness. And let's say you have some terms which are buried under this noise, the size of this noise. Then you can ask, how do you access them? And well, imagine you do another integral, which is sort of analogous to, in some sense, to acting with these Casimir operators on these things. Then you see that these terms get enhanced, so these things become delta 1 minus alpha prime. And then, in principle, you can wonder what happens to this noise. Does it get enhanced or not? And so one of the results of this previous work was that if you think of if you try to model this noise by something like sine by delta, then you integrate it over delta, it does not get enhanced. Its amplitude is still one. So therefore, you see, but by doing this integrals, you can access more and more terms, like you're accessing them in this perturbation theory. And then what follows from this analysis of the cross integrations is that morally, is that in, at least in the four-point functions, these terms are of this type. So therefore, by doing these things, you can access subleading terms, and these terms is not enhanced under this operation in CFTs. So this is something you show. Now, second comment is that, again, related to this work on correlation functions, is that as we learned, well, I guess we discussed with Peter and David and Murat, that if you do the OPE of light ray operators, if you do the OPE of two light rays, you will probably hear about it later in the workshop, then the operators which appear here are light ray operators with spin equal to J1 plus J2 minus 1. And so you can ask, okay, what we did with Bauer, what happens, let's say, we analyze scalars, so we can set J1 and J2 equal to 0. So what happens if we try to set in our formulas J equal to minus 1? So can we say something about this large delta asymptotic of these light ray operators, assuming that, of course, this is convergent, so it assumes some nice properties of the radial limit. So, and then we see that somehow all our formulas, they have, that we found with Bauer, they have this one over, well, they're proportional to J plus 1. So all the formulas we derive become trivial, and the corrections become just 0 when you set J equal 1, goes to 0. So this should be somehow extended. And I don't know what's actually happening in the generic CFT for this light ray operators. So clearly, this is not governed by the Euclidean OPE anymore. And well, there was this paper by Korchemsky this year who showed in the N equal 4. Well, he seemed to be, he understood this. I think he understood this limit in N equal 4, and then it was governed by the double Lightcon limit, but it was a planar theory, so I think it's in a generic CFT. It's fair to say what we did with Bauer, it doesn't work, and it would be nice to understand what happens to that. Okay, these were general comments. Now I would like to... Yeah. Yeah. So this is not a good example for partition function, as I will explain. So this is better an example for four-point correlator, because here you get these powers, and for the partition function you get exponents. And this story is not quite the same for partition function. Maybe I will talk about this later. But this is what happens for the correlation functions, where this f involves three-point couplings. It does behave like powers.
But you can compute all the subleading
corrections? Yeah, you can compute the subleading corrections, yeah. Using the Euclidean OPE. Okay, that's... Now, what's... what I would like to do today is to apply these ideas to modular invariants in a very simple setting. And one, in principle, we haven't done that, but using these formulas by KS, one can extend the same analysis, I believe, to correlation functions, but we didn't do that. But in the context of modular invariants, this HKS bounds are very simple, so therefore we will be able to analyze this expansion at finite delta. That's one motivation. But another motivation is also to generalize this thing to partition functions. And sort of the curious, I guess, the starting point of this project is that maybe one of you knows, but we couldn't find in the literature, so there are thousands of papers on derivation of Cardi formula. They analyze corrections, but we couldn't find the actual derivation. So it's always a settle point analysis. I guess there is a comment, one sentence in a paper by Slava and collaborators, which refers to the book, into some chapter 23.6 or something like this. But otherwise, people are doing some very naive manipulations. Presumably, in the chaotic CFTs, they're correct when deriving the Cardi formula. But if you want to analyze the corrections to it or analyze some other cases, clearly you cannot do what people are doing. So we thought, okay, let's just derive the Cardi formula and see what corrections are captured by the usual modular invariance arguments, what is the size of the error, etc. So let me just write down the results. And then I would like to explain how to derive them, because I feel maybe it might be useful in many other contexts, or it also deserves some better understanding, because even though we know how to derive it and it's very simple, I'm not sure we understand what's going on in some level. So the idea would be to look at two-dimensional CFTs, partition function. I guess in principle one can do it in high ED, but drop modular invariants. And we would like to understand the microcanonical entropy, which I defined like this. You see that it depends on the widths of energies, which you average over. This is the definition. And now the result is the following, that if you have a CFT, two-dimensional CFT, then this C delta of delta becomes the following. First, it's a term, which is a Cardi formula, and this is all will be at large delta. This is a Cardi formula. Then there is a correction to it, which is also universal and fixed in terms of averaging window and central charge. Plus, there is S of delta. Delta, which is a next term. And depending on your averaging widths, you can prove different things. So if you take your averaging over, scale it with some, it was delta, on delta, so it becomes big as delta goes to infinity. Then you can derive even further corrections to this formula, which are universal. So this S is equal log of sinh I pi. Plus the error of the size like this. So this is a result for the width which scales with delta. And if your delta is of order 1, then you can bound this thing. Two curves, and so we show that that you can have this S plus and S minus. They look something like this. Where this delta here is, well, for us it was square root of 3 over pi, it's roughly 0.55. And in practice it means that if you take a width larger than, say, here 0.55, there have to be a state. So it's a bound on a spectral gap. Now there was this paper by let me find the last name. One is a 3D Pal, and then his collaborator. Maybe some of you know his name. Okay, I apologize. So there was a paper which improved this analysis and proved that actually, well. So we showed in our paper that if the width of the window, which is 2 delta, is larger than roughly 1.1, then there has to be a state. So you can ask, it has to be a state. In the CFT, you can ask, okay, how sparse the CFT spectrum can be. And so here Bauer and me, we proved that the maximal gap is 1.1, but also there is an example of this monster CFT, which I review, which has its 1. And then in this... it was paper by Gangali and Pal. So the state, yes, we look at the maximal spectral gap at large delta, asymptotically at large delta. Yes, this will require, we can say something. I'm not sure it will be strong, but yes, using this HK type bound, we will get this. The same, you can write the analog of these formulas for finite delta, but they will be depend on the theory. And yes, you can. So there is an example where 2 delta is equal to 1, which is this. One example is monster CFT, and in this paper they improved it to basically 0.5. And so therefore this is an optimal bound. They showed that it's delta is larger than 1 plus epsilon, where epsilon is arbitrarily small, and so there is an example. So that's a result about 2D CFTs that is a maximally sparse spectrum, has a width 1. Now, this result by itself at the level I explained it now is trivial, because this is a spectral density of all states. So it has Virasoro blocks. Blocks have, of course, they have states with separation 1, so it's trivial. But the claim is that one nice thing about this method, you can generalize to Virasoro primaries. So this is a statement about if you generalize it to Virasoro primaries, then you can show that with C larger than 1, so with C larger than 1, maximal asymptotic spectral gap is 1. This is one result related to this. Again, I don't understand what's happening, but in this paper by Gangali and Pal, they again draw some inspiration from sphere packing. I will tell later, so it would be interesting to understand why this optimal bound somehow arises, or, well, anyhow. Now another result which I will state is the following. So let's say if you're interested in a
Sorry, Sasha, just yes. to clarify. So what you're plotting there is S plus and S
minus. Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
For which
yes.
value of large delta? For very...
S plus and S minus. So again, these things are... My bad. They do not depend on large delta. These are asymptotically, they depend on a small delta. And this is a function of delta. And here are the values so for a 1 and minus 1. And the second result is the following. So if you assume let's say this would be result 1, this is a result 2. So if you consider C to infinity limit with delta over C fixed and larger than C over 6, so this is the region of large black holes in ADS, and you assume, as usual, sparseness. Which is, the precise statement is that the sum of operators, delta less than delta heavy, e to the minus beta delta, is finite for beta larger than 2 pi, and C going to infinity. So this is what people usually call sparseness. Then you can derive, this is a generalization of the HKS formula, you can derive the microcanonical entropy. So it would be an entropy of black holes plus some, I guess, atmosphere. And here, the logarithmic correction to the entropy is universal. And the order 1 correction you cannot compute from this general principles.
Sorry, Sasha. What do you mean delta over C fixed larger than C over 6?
OK, I will explain now. So you take, you consider a family of CFTs with large central charges. You compute the macrocanonical entropy of states, which, yes, thank you. Yes. That's a statement. And again, here, you can take the windows. The size of the window is can be C of alpha, where alpha from 0 to 1. And finally, no, that's a statement about once. Well, in a sense, it's a statement about family of CFTs because I consider C to infinity limit. So I assume that there is a family of CFTs labeled by C, which I can vary at will, and then I consider instead of large delta limit, C to infinity limit. It's a good. Yeah, I don't have result here. I think if you do the delta larger than 1/2, you can do it, but it will be somehow trivial in a sense that the whole thing will be just dominated by the upper limit and Cardy formula there. So, I think, here. Let me say a few words. Here the expansion. So you see, if delta is of order, say, square root of delta, this factor is of order 1. So it's a correction to this constant piece. If delta is less, then these terms have an expansion as 1 over delta 1 minus 2 alpha plus 1 over delta 2 minus 4 alpha. So this term, you can only use it if it's larger than the error, which is if alpha is larger than 1/3. So this piece is larger than the error only for alpha larger than 1/3, but okay. There is this formula. And finally, one way you derive these formulas is that you prove this. You can prove the version of what is known, I guess, as incomes or income theorem, which says the following thing. This theorem, whatever, is that so if you consider this partition function, which is given from integral from 0 to infinity d delta, e to the minus beta minus 0 12 rho of delta, we have that modulo invariant. And you consider this integral. And yes, and we assume that that it has a gap above the vacuum. So say if you take limit beta to 0, you have the vacuum in the dual channel, which e to the e squared c over 3 beta, 1 plus some gap. Then the result is that this implies that of delta, the integral from 0 to delta, d delta prime rho of delta prime is equal to order. This is a Cardy formula with a logarithmic correction. And here you can prove the error estimate. And again, so this is, if you wish, this is a bounds you derive using crossing equations. And then you can check that these bounds are optimal by, say, looking at some example. For example, here, if you look at the 2D Ising model, you see that this estimate of an error is optimal. So. Again, this is, if you wish, this set of formulas is, I think, what it's a precise version of what people mean by Cardy formula in different contexts. Now, this statement of results, let me show you how you derive them. I don't know if there are any questions. Sorry? Is there a log? So the log is here, right? The log of delta. It's a logarithmic correction to that thing. Okay,
this case, alpha can be 0. So small delta can be order 1?
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what size it is?
Yeah, here we cannot derive the. I think it's a yes. It's a good question. Here delta can be of order 1, and we cannot derive the similar plot here. I think this plot is the same, if I'm not mistaken. So this constant here, to derive it in this case requires knowing something about this constant, which appear for sparseness, so we don't know it. But I think you can probably derive it if you introduce here a constant. And this one, I believe it's the same, but of course it's in for the expectations, it's a very weak statement because, well, and this is actually one interesting question. For the chaotic CFTs or CFTs of this type, you expect the gap to be extremely small, and here it's of order 1, so there should be a better argument. It would be very nice to understand where this e to the minus s density of states come from here. Okay, so let me derive. How do you derive, for example?
Sorry, why should it be very small?
E to the minus s compared to 1. e to the minus delta to the some power, which is controlled by volume rho. I think that's a usual expectation. That so the density of, for the density of state. Okay, let me derive quickly how the, it's very simple to derive this sort of results if you follow the right steps. And I think one thing is that here you see I write the partition function simply as a function of beta. So this is a common simplification. If you set angular potential to zero, so we have a partition function moduli invariance, which depends on the complex parameter of the torus. So here we specified only a family of some betas. It would be nice to extend that and to include effectively spin. Here nothing depends on spin. I don't know what will be the effect of including spin. And I guess also recently there was this extended Cardi formulas discussed in the literature. Presumably similar results should be possible to obtain for this extended Cardi formulas. But I hope to learn about them I guess at this conference. Understand. Okay, let me show you how do you, for example, let's say you want to prove that every CFT at large delta, the spectral gap cannot be larger than one. So this is very easy to do. So let me just do that. The idea is the following. I guess it follows the, at least the it's in the spirit, so I learned from papers by Slava and Chow, there is this Karamata proof of Tauberian theorems, and it seems like this has some spirit of it. But again, I don't know what's the precise relation, so the idea is the following. Let's say you start with a theta function in the window delta minus delta and delta plus delta. This is what we want to integrate against the spectral density. I hope this notation is clear. So it's zero outside this interval. So the way you do it is you start by bounding it. This is a function of some parameter delta prime. And you start by, you want to find some pair of functions which bound this function from above and from below. So first of all, let me, and the choice of this function in a sense is a non-trivial part. They're not given. You have to guess them or have some method to find them. So let me first rewrite this thing, this theta function. So now, in principle, every step should be trivial. So we bound it by above by this thing. Sorry. On this interval, where this function is non-zero, this prefactor is larger than this, therefore we have the bound from above. Similarly, we can bound from below by e to the beta delta minus L minus beta delta prime, the same theta function. Okay, this is a trivial step. Now we apply the first line here to get theta minus delta, delta plus delta, bounded by this same thing. Let me just, here, if you don't mind, I will just erase this thing and put here now pi plus. And here again, we bound from below, so we can put pi minus. Now what we do is we integrate integrate both sides against d delta prime, rho of delta prime. which from 0 to infinity. And here we get what we want. We have a sum of the states, sum of the states in this interval. And so we get this delta minus delta, delta plus delta. I can also write it as the integral df, which is of df delta prime. And this is bounded from above by e to the beta delta plus lambda integral 0 to infinity d delta df delta prime e to the minus beta delta prime f plus delta prime. And here, similarly, we have e to the beta minus delta integral of df e to the minus beta delta prime by minus delta prime. Now the next step is that you can use somehow in this problem. It's nice to consider these functions. I told you these functions, it's up to us how to choose them. So we choose them as a functions with a bounded Fourier, with a bounded support of the Fourier transform. So we have a Fourier representation where this F has support only for T in the minus alpha minus plus. The Fourier support is bounded in some interval. And then you see that here, if we plug this formula here, we get simply this integral e to the minus I beta I delta t, the prime t. Integral dE by minus t. And here, similarly, we get e to the minus I delta t integral over dt by plus. Now the thing, what happens is the following, that you see that this is nothing but a partition function at a complex temperature. So this thing is nothing but so let me define it. This is the integral without the shift. It's not quite partition function. So just Laplace transform of rho of delta e to the minus beta delta. That's a definition. So this thing here that appears is nothing but the Laplace transform at complex temperature. And that's where sort of this complex Tauberian theorems are, in a sense, used, in that we use this modular invariance condition here. This modular invariant condition, it holds for any real beta larger than zero, and that's what we have here. We have a Laplace transform, and now what we do is the following: we say that this thing is nothing but e to the say minus beta plus I t c over 12 partition function. Then we use modular transform, modular invariance. So we write this z as a whatever z over 4 pi square over beta plus it. Then what we do is we isolate the contribution of the, say, vacuum which you can rewrite using a vacuum or light state, which you can rewrite using crossing kernel as a Laplace transform of some toy model density, which will produce a contribution of light ray operators. And the heavy, and here we are left with the contribution of the heavy operators in the dual channel. Now you want to bound those, and the way it works is that we use unitarity. So we can bound it by just absolute value of the temperature. And then, since this T varies in some finite interval, where is it, crucially we choose this function to have a finite Fourier support, you can bound it by T squared plus lambda. And this, again, this is just follows from the fact that if you have a unitary sum, e to the minus temperature times delta, when you increase, when you decrease the temperature, you can only make the, well, you suppress it. When you increase the temperature, the suppression of heavy, of states is less, so this is simply a statement of unitarity. Beta, yeah. Sorry, this is... Okay, so in this way, you see that what happened is that we bounded this thing, delta minus delta, delta plus delta, df delta prime. We bounded by the contribution of the light state in the dual channel, let's say the vacuum and some things. So it will be the the integral over Fourier transform. This is a known density, this is the usual thing, and then here, you write you have in addition the contribution of this heavy states. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So in principle, you can choose also include some light states there, but in practice, all the corrections will be subleading in this regime. So in this way you get this bound or in terms of the light state and plus e to the minus bc over 12, this heavy partition function, 4 pi squared beta squared plus lambda plus squared, integral from minus lambda plus to lambda plus, dp of absolute value. And similarly from below, you bound it by the same thing with dp f minus at p, the contribution of the light stuff, plus. Here it will be minus. E to the minus beta c over 12. Is that heavy? 4 pi squared beta squared plus lambda minus square times an integral over dt. Absolute value of minus t. Okay, so now this is so Slava was asking if there is a bound on this, if there is a bound on this spectral density at finite delta. This is a bound, so this works at finite delta. Here, there is a bunch of random choices that you can make. You can choose phi. You should choose phis. You can choose what is the beta. And then the splitting into light and heavy, it's also optional. So, but if you take now the large delta limit of this formula, then things simplify. So if you take the...
Can I ask you
yes.
Part that don't belong to this
yes. I was waiting for this question. So, well, I wish I knew. Let's see, let's erase. Can I keep this? Okay, this. This does not belong to this equation. So now it should be good. Again, so there are two. This equation has just two ingredients. It has this contribution of the vacuum in the dual channel, and it has these heavy things. So heavy things you can bound using HKS formulas, which I don't have time to review. But basically, HKS formula bounds this contribution in terms of light operators. And then, the claim is that. If you take the last steps, you take delta to be very large, you take beta to be pi c over 3 delta, this is a settled point beta. You choose lambda plus minus less than 2 pi. And then you can show that this heavy, that heavy is suppressed. And therefore, you can bound the contribution in terms of just the contribution of these guys. And the final bound that you get is this type. C plus rho 0 of delta, C minus rho 0 of delta, where rho 0 of delta is simply this density states of it's a known density states, which is a crossing kernel of the vacuum. It's what you get in the Cardy formula. This is delta over 3 quarters, and is it 2? So this is rho 0. And C plus minus are given in terms of these functions that you can choose. So remember these functions at the very beginning was such that this function should be chosen such that they, on one hand, they bound the theta function. So the very first step, if you remember here, was that we start with a theta function, which was bounded by this phi plus and phi minus. So this is the first condition. And the second condition that you want is that they have a finite Fourier support. I don't know what is the space of such functions. One choice, which we made in our paper, is that you can choose this phi plus, for example, to be sine lambda plus delta minus delta prime over times some proper normalizations that I will not write. And you can choose phi minus. Similarly, with lambda minus, here you add something like this. And you can check that these functions they do satisfy this condition, and they do have a bounded Fourier transform. And then this, I told you that Gengele and Paul, they found an optimal spectral gap, that it's one, and so they used phi minus, which they say appeared in this air packing problems, which is cos squared pi delta minus delta prime over 2 delta 1 minus delta prime minus delta squared. This does the job, apparently. So this is how you get this local bounds that I told you first. These local bounds, they are not enough to prove this stronger Tauberian theorems or to prove the stronger formulas, Hardy formulas for windows of width that scales with delta. But you can use them as a lemma, which you can use in proving the stronger bounds. And to prove the stronger bounds, again, the trick is I'll just say one sentence. How do you prove this other theorem? Basically, you take the modular invariance equation, and you integrate it you act on it on some linear functional. And again, it has this spirit of having a bounded Fourier transform, and again, it's acts on a complex plane. So if you take the following thing, and you act with this operation on this Laplace transform of the original density at complex temperature Z minus the crossing kernel of the vacuum, or Cardy, if you wish, Cardy density. This is something that you want to bound. And if you act with this functional, which is simply, if you consider a complex temperature plane, I told you that the modular invariance holds for positive beta. So you do this vertical integral, and you have this pole here. And what happens is this pole is responsible for reproducing you this theta function from zero to delta, and the rest you can bound using a bunch of tricks. And the result is that you prove this theorem. I don't have time to explain the tricks. Can I do one more minute? Yeah. So let me just show you. So this was asymptotic statements. I wanted to show some plotted finite delta. So you can say, okay, now this formula is a finite delta formula. Let's apply it to the 2D Ising model. What do we get? In other words, the goal is now to see how these formulas that were derived in an asymptotic delta regime, how do they work at finite delta. And for this, of course, you need to know the spectrum of light operators to bound these guys, and then you can vary beta and lambda to choose say optimal value. And the way it looks is the following. So if you recall again, I wrote for you this formula for S for the microscopical entropy, which has this cardi plus log correction plus this function S of delta and delta. And there was this S plus and minus. Asymptotically. Now, if you do this, let's play this game in a 2D Ising model. So we have here, say, delta, which we consider 100. Then there are these asymptotic values, which were derived at large delta. So they look like this on this. Minus 1 and 1. Then there is an actual behavior of this function. And as I told you, we're dealing with the discrete spectrums of these functions. So here I choose delta to be equal 1.7. So this S, it has some erratic behavior here. And if you actually try to derive what is this S plus and S minus are at finite delta, well, we did this numerically, we got set of points which converges to the asymptotic values, but become worse. So, okay, this sort of thing. Okay, so just let me conclude with maybe a few remarks. Well, one obvious thing is that here, everywhere, and in our previous paper on correlators, and here we ignored spin. And it would be nice to see how it affects all the conclusions. Finally, this HKS type formulas, as I said, there was this paper which derives similar bounds in the, for the correlators. So it would be nice to see how this works there. Yes, it would be nice to apply this maybe to some, I would like to apply this to some situation in holography where it happens actually that to derive the bounds on ADS effective field theories, you have to bound these outliers. Thank you.
So one situation in which you expect the asymptotic spectral gap to become exponentially small is when there are twist gaps, or when there's a twist gap, so yeah. There are no conserved currents. Have you thought at all about that?
Well, Bauer told me yesterday that you're thinking about that. So I was going to ask you. No, I haven't thought.
Okay. Yeah, we should check.
Yeah, we should check. Yeah.
This large delta result where you found that if two delta is less than one, there has to be an operator there.
Yeah.
This is asymptotic at large delta. Can
you see? So this is asymptotic in large delta, so this holds here, but this is now a finite delta plot. And yes, I think you can derive also the spectral gap at finite delta. In particular, you can try to play the usual modular bootstrap game. For example, when there has to be a state the first excited state.
Can you put a bound on the sparseness assumptions people make usually in holography or anything like this?
Sorry, say again?
People usually make sparseness assumptions.
Sparseness assumptions in the large C context.
Yeah, can
yeah,
can
so
this
that,
be
was, that was. So in the large C context, I use this assumption. To prove the theorem, I use the sparseness. I don't know if. Also, our results that we got, they were very much in the HKS spirit. So they got only results for C larger than 6. That's also what we got. So I'm not sure what if we have a lot to say about what, beyond what they said. Yeah.
So does anything change if you consider Virasoro instead of the exponentials?
Yeah, so the only thing that changes is that I guess you want to see to be C larger than 1, so that we have infinite number of Virasoros, and otherwise it's very similar. So all the results basically go through for C larger. In our paper, we have the formula for Virasoro.
Is there any obstacle to proving the extended Cardy formula using your technology when you like turn on the real part of tau?
I just haven't thought about it. Okay. Probably it would be nice to understand it. Yeah.